You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you and you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
We begin with the Toronto Maple Leafs and our good friend in the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket, Aaron from Coquitlam. Aaron writes, what a comeback. I still see this thing going seven, but I've been wrong before. Have the previous guy wrenchers. Don't know what that means.
I think he means gut wrenchers.
Have the previous guy wrenchers taught the Leafs anything? We will know in a few days. Looking forward to your take. Aaron, we got takes.
Aaron is a Leafs fan, by the way.
You think?
Well, some people may not know that, but Aaron is a Leafs fan that somehow enjoys our show, although we actively root against the Toronto Maple Leafs. That being said, I think we've been realistic in our analysis. I mean, I actually picked the Leafs to win this series. We did one of our Play Now Best Bets, and I said, I think it was after game two, actually. I was like, yeah, I think the Leafs are gonna take this one. It hasn't been easy, and it didn't look good for them early in game five. In fact, it looked dreadful for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They had a terrible, terrible start. Like, it was embarrassing how badly they started. They were down 2-0 after 6 minutes and looked absolutely shell-shocked. And it was funny because we talked to Steven Brunt earlier in the day, and I was thinking about what he was saying. He's like, will the Leafs wilt under the pressure? And it sure looked like they were wilting. It could have been worse, honestly. It could have been way worse than 2-0 if not for Jack Campbell. Mm-hmm. And that was really key. And maybe some people weren't watching as closely at that time because they were either, I don't know, too busy laughing or crying or just assuming that the game was over. But it was not over because the Leafs really found their legs in the second period after the Tampa Bay Lightning took their second too many men.
Yep, bad penalties.
Too many men penalty of the night. Toronto scored on that power play. It was Tavares from Nylander, a couple guys that had really been criticized in the run-up to Game 5. Then came an incredible third period. The Leafs scored two quick ones by Riley and Nylander, and the Riley one especially. I don't know what the Tampa Bay Lightning, the defending Stanley Cup champs, two-time defending Stanley Cup champs were doing defensively, but they left Morgan Riley all by himself in the slot. And he scored. Nylander scores after that on a really nice shot. And so the momentum swings. And honestly, I don't know if I've ever heard Scotiabank Arena so loud as it was last night. Maybe for a Raptors game. But generally, the Toronto Arena for hockey games, for Leafs games, like, it is not a loud place. It is a very corporate place. The one thing you notice is like, hey, what's going on in the intermissions? Because no one's back in their seats in time. Like, it is it's considered a very corporate crowd, and obviously they haven't had a ton to cheer about, but they were really loud. But despite that energy in the building, the Tampa Bay Lightning came back with a goal to tie it by Ryan McDonagh. So all these lead changes, all these momentum changes, and then right after that, the Leafs counter right back with a goal by Austin Matthews off a rebound pass, I'll call it that.
POP. Pass off pad.
Pass off pad? Okay.
Get with the lingo.
Oh, okay.
Laddie knows.
Mitch Marner popped it?
Just say POP.
No, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. It's stupid. Off a Mitch Marner shot. And the Leafs go on to win. And it was an incredible game. Like, even if you wanted the Leafs to lose, you had to admit that that was an incredible game. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, all their big guys showed up. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, Morgan Riley, even Jason Spezza had like a veteran speech after the first period that everyone's talking about, although I'm not sure what he said. I love this. Like, Jason Spezza said stuff after the first period. Oh, wow. Great. Like, so he was like, come on, guys.
You rallied the troops.
You rallied the troops. Okay.
To be honest, even prior to that, look, from my take, there was two big takeaways here, and I know that the comeback was massive, and I know that they got great performances from Marner and Matthews in the third period to win the game. This thing was decided. There was a critical moment in the first period when the Bolts got up 2-0, and it was deja vu from the previous game where Tampa Bay came out and dominated the first period and got out to a lead that was insurmountable. Tampa Bay had a missed opportunity in that first period to put the Leafs away, because not only were they up 2-0, they outshot them 14-4, and they have multiple power play opportunities after they got up 2-0 to bury them. I'll give a lot. And look, I've been really critical of Jack Campbell and Sheldon Keefe. I'll give both a lot of credit, because Keefe was the one that took Campbell out in the previous game and kind of gave him the pep talk and said, I don't know what it's the same thing as the Jason Spezza transcript. We don't know what he said. But the obvious implication was, don't get too down on yourself. We're going to need you in this series. And for Campbell to be able to come back and make all those saves after letting in 2 on the first 4 shots was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed his team to claw their way back into that. And Keefe did a good job prior to that to setting the stage for it. And I never thought I'd say this about a Toronto Maple Leafs team, but they did look like an actual resilient bunch last night.
So I've got 2 points. The first is that the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though they're still very much in this series and could win this series, have just not looked like themselves. And I think John Cooper, their head coach, has really been disappointed with his team, especially in the loss in game 1, where he basically said that we didn't even show up. But perhaps more than anything, last night, when the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that has only faced elimination once, I believe, when they won the Stanley Cup the first time and the second time, they only faced elimination once, and that was against the New York Islanders in game 7. And they played like a perfect game against the Isles to win that one. They don't look consistently good. You see flashes of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I think maybe this has been their story all season long. Like, they just don't play a full 60 minutes, and they didn't play a full 60 minutes yesterday. And if they had just kept going and not done stupid things, like if they're just sloppy line changes, like getting a pair of too many men on the ice penalties. Now, people will say that's on the coach. Like, I never buy that. I'm like, players know how to make line changes. It's not like John Cooper's like, all right, 2 lines, get out there, right? Like, you know what's supposed to happen. And John Cooper, after the game, had this to say.
We're not really making them earn it. We're kind of giving it to them. And, you know, we take too many men penalties, which... momentum killers, one they score on, that's on us. We get a power play there, then we take a penalty to take ourselves off, and then give up 2 4-and-4 goals. Special teams, you can consider 4-and-4 special teams in a sense, and tonight we lost that battle again. Some games we're winning it and some games we're not, and tonight I just thought we just too many mistakes. That game was there for the taking for us, and We let it slip through our fingers, and it's on us.
Yeah, they really are. They're not playing like defending Stanley Cup champs. Now, by the way, he really sounds like Ryan Reynolds, doesn't he? Like, it sounds like Ryan Reynolds
I've never thought of that before.
He said, yeah, it's
now
like,
I'm doing
we
the
just, We just let it slip through our fingers, and it's on us.
There's some Ryan Reynolds in
there's
there.
There's definitely
sure.
some Ryan Reynolds in there. As for the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is what we wanted to see, isn't it? This is what we, as far as the series go, like, it would have been funny, I suppose, if Tampa Bay had like swept the Toronto Maple Leafs. But isn't this what we want to see? The Leafs get to the point now where they have 2 chances to knock out Tampa Bay. Can they do it? Because they had 3 chances against Montreal last year, and they couldn't do it. And it's funny because last year, when they took the 3-1 series lead on Montreal, I don't think there were many people out there that were saying like, oh, now's when the Leafs are going to collapse. Like, most people
but
were,
they did.
most people were like, yeah, but this series is over. Montreal stinks. Like, yep. Because Montreal had not had, they had that good start to the weird regular season with the All-Canadian division, but they did not end particularly well. They just didn't look like a very good team. They didn't look like a team capable of beating the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially when they fell down 3-1. It wasn't anyone like, oh, like the here come the Habs.
Yeah, yeah.
But people are saying that about the Lightning, and we all know that they have the potential to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 2 games in a row. Especially, you go back to Tampa for Game 6. Tampa's probably going to be the betting favorite. Not a huge favorite, but they'll be a slight betting favorite. And then Game 7, who knows? But this is what we wanted to see. This is the entertainment aspect of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they get a lot of attention. They get way too much attention in this country. I get it. Some of it's obnoxious. Some of it's kind of like, blah, like I can't believe people are saying this about the Toronto Maple Leafs. But this is also, all that attention that they get is also why the pressure builds on this team. And why it'll be fascinating to watch to see if they can get the job done. Because this is a huge task for them. Not only are they facing a really good team, so in Game 6, Tampa Bay is going to be furious at the way they gave Game 5 away. They'll be at home. They're going to be favored. And then hopefully Tampa wins that just to give us Game 7 on it in Toronto with the Maple Leafs really needing to win.
Tampa Bay, of course, is 16-0, a perfect 16-0 since the beginning of the 2020 playoffs following a loss. So you can pencil Game 7 in right now, I would say. Let's go to the other Canadian team in action last night. Not such a good outcome for the Edmonton Oilers against the Los Angeles Kings. Adrian Kempe scored just 72 seconds, a minute 12 into overtime, to give the LA Kings a 5-4 win in Edmonton in Game 5 of their Western Conference opening round series. That means the Kings are now up 3-2 with the series going back to Los Angeles. Entertainment value, third period in overtime off the charts. One of the weirdest overtimes I've ever seen, if only because I've never seen a team not be ready for overtime. Usually you say at the beginning of the game, we weren't ready to start. We didn't start on time. I've never heard anybody say that after playing 3 periods of hockey. It was the most one-sided 72 seconds of overtime I've ever seen.
You know what? I missed it.
It was unbelievable.
I was getting ready for bed.
I don't blame you for missing it.
After the third period, I'm like, all right, well, you know, do the brushing the teeth, have a short cry. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't cry before bed? Oh, as a Canucks fan? Oh, okay.
I usually do that after the game is over.
Right. Okay. No, I just like have a traditional cry at night, just like, oh, I'm a Canucks fan. I turned the TV on in bed and the Kings are celebrating. So I was like, oh, come on. I wanted to see that. But it was funny how the Oilers game in a lot of ways played out, at least until the end, a lot like the Leafs game in that both teams had really bad starts in front of their home fans and both teams were able to recover. The difference is that the Leafs got it done and the Edmonton Oilers didn't. Probably worth noting that Troy Stecher scored again LA Kings.
Todd McLellan, I'll say this, Todd McLellan has coached his ass off in this series. That's maybe the guy I've been most impressed with because, again, I don't remember seeing anyone, maybe outside of Drantz. Did Drantz pick LA? I don't remember anyone picking LA. You were pretty confident that the series was Edmonton's, and I don't even think,
for sure.
I don't even think you anticipated that it was going to go long.
I thought the Oilers were going to not sweep the LA Kings, but not have a really tough time with them either.
McLellan's done a good job of pushing the right buttons in this series.
I think I've underestimated the LA Kings or overestimated the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers just looked really good down the stretch. I'm not saying they have the perfect season. I mean, they fired the coach. But I thought after that, they were really coming together as a team. I thought they looked good. I thought they had question marks in goal. And I suppose they do. But I just thought that team was better than what they've shown so far. And look, they've shown some good things, right? Like the other comparison to the Leafs game and the Oilers game was that the big guns showed up. The big guns showed up for Toronto and the big guns showed up for Edmonton as well, like Draisaitl and McDavid.
Let's clarify. They showed up late.
Yeah, right? But they showed up.
But I mean, here's the thing.
They got their points. They got their goals. But I think what's been most surprising for me, at least, and maybe I shouldn't be surprised, is how good the Kings have looked offensively. Like they're putting a ton of shots on net.
Mm-hmm. I think they've realized the key to success is volume shooting against Smith. And then a lot of driving the net. And really, that's been the key for me. Because you remember that we talked at length about the Grundstrom goal the other night, where there was a big debate about whether that should have been a goal or not. The winner last night was Kempe putting his head down, going around Duncan Keith and driving the net. So they've obviously made a concerted effort to get to the blue paint and just take our chances with, are we going to get this goal disallowed for goalie interference? Are we going to get a penalty? Who cares? We need, these are the kind of plays that we need to make. So there's obviously been a concerted effort there. Edmonton and Toronto actually kind of, their games mirrored one another because Edmonton was brutal to start that game. They were down 2-0 early. I believe the Kings outshot the Oilers 16-5, which is actually worse than Tampa Bay outshooting Toronto 14-4 in the first period. And of course, you know, you've seen this script with the Oilers time and time again. McDavid and Draisaitl put the team on their back when the chips are down. McDavid was on a borderline unstoppable in the third period. To give you another reminder that momentum is a facade, Edmonton out all of it in the third period. Even when the Kings punched back and made it 4-2 on the Deneau goal, Edmonton just bounced right back. And they just dominated proceedings. And you thought that that would carry over to overtime. And then they just came out and didn't do anything. McDavid touched the puck once. And he was out there, I believe, for the entire 72 seconds in overtime. And that was on the opening draw.
Can I play the end of McDavid's postgame in a little bit here?
I would love you to, laddie.
I thought it was really interesting, the line that he ended the postgame with.
You know, we found ways to produce offense, and we score four tonight. That needs to be enough in a playoff game. Obviously, it's not. We've got to keep the puck over net.
Yeah, someone texted into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket at 650-650, already asking if they go to Koskinen in game six. Now, obviously, they're not going to do that. That's
insanity. Well, it's not all on Mike Smith. I mean, it's a team. I think he was probably talking about team defense. Talk about Duncan Keith, who was brought in for these exact same moments. Like, he gets walked in overtime, did he not? And he also had a bad giveaway on, I think it was the, did Kempe score twice? He had a bad giveaway on one of the goals where he just fell. By the way, was the Edmonton ice made of frozen banana peels last night? Because everyone was just like falling.
Kempe finished with 2 goals and 3 points, by the way. 9 shots on goal. He was a going concern.
So the other games, Carolina bounces back in a big way, played a much smarter game. Despite the fact that Boston got Charlie McAvoy back into the lineup, the Carolina Hurricanes used their crowd. That is a loud crowd in Carolina.
You know, Carolina scored the first goal in all 5 games in that series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a team that knows how to start on time.
Carolina wins that one 5-1. The St. Louis Blues, and you called this one, went into Minnesota in game 5 and won 5-2. And if the Wild lose this, wow. Because they got cap concerns this offseason. And if they lose this series, they will just have wasted a performance by Kaprizov, who has, I think, 7 goals
I'm glad
now.
You mentioned that.
In 5 games.
This will be a waste of a high pick, whatever they're going to give up to, because it's a conditional pick for Fleury, but it's either a first or a second. And they're going to waste an all-time performance from Kirill the Thrill. He has been unreal in this series, and I'm not sure how many people are aware of that because I don't know how many people are actively watching this series. I'm still waiting for one of these games to be super tight down the stretch and maybe even have some semblance of overtime, because you look at it on paper and you're like, series is delivered. A series that we thought would be tight, it's 3-2 right now. This is about as tight as it can get, but the games themselves, I don't know what it is about this series, but the games themselves have not been close enough. This one was close for a little bit, but then Tarasenko went off. Great night for the Russians in that series, by the way. Kaprizov goes nuts. Tarasenko scores a natural hat trick. It just hasn't been tight within the games. The series has been close. It's a 3-2 series. It's all you could have asked for. But I don't know. How much of the series have you actually sat down and watched?
Not much. I've been watching the other games.
Watched any of it.
The Wild and the Blues have been playing on the same night as the Leafs and the Oilers, so I've been watching the Canadian teams first. Adam Vingan is going to join us at 7 o'clock, so we have another segment of what happened.
Which is good.
On the Halford and Brough Show, and that's coming up next, so we can talk more about the Leafs and the Oilers. We can answer some texts in the Dunbar Lumber text line. We can also talk about the NHL draft lottery, which went yesterday, where the Canucks are going to pick, what general manager Patrick Alvin said about the draft lottery after it was done. Lots to discuss. It was a great night of hockey last night. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
And before we go to break on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, I need to tell you about the odds for tonight from PlayNow.com. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook. I've thrown a parlay up tonight. It's my special Sid Ovi parlay. I've got the Caps beating the Panthers and the Penguins beating the Rangers to close out that series. I got the Pens at 215 and the Caps at 290. Once again, check it out, PlayNow.com. Bet on hockey like never before with PlayNow Sports, your local BC sportsbook.
You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you and you the best.
Halford and Brough.
One on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford, Brough, Sportsnet 650. Hours one and two of the program are in the books. Download the podcast now. Apple, Google, Spotify. Hour two, classic Halford and Brough fashion. I think we covered 18 different topics in just under 60 minutes of content. We closed out with a debate about whether or not Darnell Nurse is going to be suspended. In case you missed it prior to going to break, Nurse is going to have a hearing with the NHL's Department of Player Safety for a spinning headbutt. That's how I'm officially classifying it now. A spinning headbutt on Philip Deneau last night in Edmonton's 5-4 overtime loss to the Los Angeles Kings. What it means? Nurse could be suspended as the Oilers face elimination in Game 6. We'll keep an eye on that. Hour 3 of the program just about to get underway. Trent Cull is going to join us in just a moment here. I need to tell you that hour three of this program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. To the phone lines we go. Very excited to have our next guest on the program. He is the coach of your AHL Abbotsford Canucks. It is Trent Cull here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Trent. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good, thanks. And thanks for taking the time to do this. We wanted to start with the playoff series in Bakersfield. And like, we don't mean to make light of a loss, but we kind of felt like hours after previewing the series was over. Like, I forgot how quickly the AHL playoffs and that opening round series can happen. We were all excited about the Abbotsford Canucks going into the playoffs, and then it was over really quickly. What happened over the course of those two games in Bakersfield for those that maybe didn't get a chance to digest the two games and the losses to the Condors in full?
Well, I guess it moves quick, to your point. I mean, that was the – unfortunately, we finished in Manitoba. We had to wait there and see where what our fate was. We didn't win the last game. And then they ended up winning versus Stockton. So this is a Saturday night. We're sitting on a plane, you know, getting 10, 11 o'clock. Waiting to see the results, and then they ended up winning their game. So they had to get on the plane, fly to California. We got in LAX. Sunday, we went back to the airport and picked up the five guys that just came back from Vancouver. And then from there, we drove to Bakersfield. We got in there on Sunday afternoon. We had a practice on Monday, and then we had a pregame skate, and then we played that evening. And we were slow starting, just to be honest with you. And I knew there was going to be some issues with our group. A lot of guys coming back from injury, and then, you know, having five, six guys come back from Vancouver, trying to get themselves back up and running the American Hockey League. And then we lost that game. We're up 1-0, 23 seconds left. And, you know, they scored a goal and ended up winning that game on a power play in overtime. And from there, we go to the next night. I liked their game better. I thought we were better throughout from the night before, but just wasn't enough. Ended up losing again by a goal. They scored a goal with just under 2 minutes left in the third period.
Ryan Johnson said afterwards that he tried to prep players, and I'm sure you did as well, that were new to the playoff experience of what the difference between the regular season and the playoffs were. And he said that he felt there were some players that didn't take in that information or rise to the occasion. I assume if he meant that they're new to the playoff experience, that they were younger players. Would you agree with that sentiment, and can this be a learning experience going forward?
Yeah, no, for sure it can be. And you know, and I'm not going to sit here and name names, but it just wasn't younger guys either. I mean, we had guys that had games experience. And, you know, I mean, like, well, what I say about playoffs, too, it has no remorse. It has no conscience. It has no feeling. And, you know, that's where you have to be prepared. You have to be ready to go. And like I said to you before, I knew what our challenges were going to be a month ahead, because we had guys, like going right back to the, we made playoffs, like Hoglander at the deadline ends up, you know, being out for a year. So we're actually a body less in the organization. So we knew we were going to be body short. There's always usually injuries that happen through that.
Trent, unfortunately, we're going to have to drop the line right now. It sounds as though we're having some technical difficulties here. Trent Call, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks, the American Hockey League entity. Laddie is going to drop the call. He'll try and pick up on a better line. For those that missed it, he was in the midst of referencing some comments that Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, made, and you read them on the air. I'll reiterate them. Johnson said that he was unhappy at how abruptly the season ended. Quote, "I fully expected us to go in there and win the series, and I'm extremely disappointed we didn't. I tried to prep players that were new to the playoff experience of what the difference was between regular season hockey and playoff hockey, and I felt there were some players that didn't take in that information or rise to the occasion." So that's an interesting quote in and of itself. Trent Call was just in the midst of trying to address that. He obviously said, and we kind of assumed this, he wasn't going to name names.
Yeah.
And start individually listing who failed to rise to the occasion.
Trent, would you power rank the most disappointing players in the playoffs, please?
And go. No, here's the thing. When you talk about your prospect system, American Hockey League, farm team, whatever, there's that really interesting balance between going out and winning games and being competitive and trying to win just like at every other level, and then doing the prospect development thing at the same time. The good organizations manage to do both at the same time and have those goals in simpatico. The ones that don't, or the ones that maybe don't necessarily translate AHL success to the NHL level, it becomes a lot different balancing act, and it does become a balancing act at times. Anyway, Trent, do we have you back on the line now?
Yeah, you guys got me. Is this okay?
This is a little bit better. Just don't move.
Good.
The playoffs were disappointing, but overall, Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, said that he couldn't be happier with the job that you and the rest of the coaching staff have done. He said that since day one, your attention to detail, the support you've given the players, you've had them prepped for games and prepped for hopefully the NHL careers. All the challenges you faced this season, it must feel good to hear that from the management of the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think we're always striving to get better. That's with our group, with our staff. This year, different challenges we had thrown at us too. I thought we responded really well. Our staff grew exponentially, you know, just more guys around because of our travel and the situation. So more guys to handle, that's for sure. But you know what? It is nice. It's nice to hear that. I work closely with Ryan. He knows that there's no spur of the moment or off the hip kind of, you know what I mean? We're trying to do the right things for the players and trying to put them in the best situations for them to succeed. And I'm glad that he said that. You know, sometimes, I mean, on the flip side of things, you know, you go back into the Vancouver market and you know, you never know what you hear. And obviously there's a lot of people that may feel different. But it's nice to know that your boss sees the work that we're trying to do and every day and how we're grinding to try to get the most we can out of the players and of course move them on. So
what is the key to developing young players? Because I don't know the reason. Maybe it's not enough draft picks that have been delivered to the AHL team. Either there haven't been enough picks, or some of those players have graduated directly to the NHL, or they were the wrong picks. But the list of players that have gone from the AHL and spent some time there with the Canucks AHL team and then gone on to the NHL, it's pretty limited. And I know that a lot of Canucks fans just want that to change because they look at what the successful teams do, whether they're in Tampa Bay and they're in Pittsburgh, and all of a sudden, like, you see this new guy in the Pittsburgh lineup and you're like, who is this guy? Or the Tampa Bay lineup, who is this guy? And you look then and see that that guy has spent a number of years in the AHL and now he's contributing. So what is the key to doing that?
I think that there's got to be some patience too, right? I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, you know, like, I've been in that Tampa organization. I've worked there. Like, unless those guys are, you know, utter superstars too, I mean, everybody spends time in Syracuse, New York before they go to Tampa. So so that would be a bit of a difference right there. And just a great example would be someone like Adam Gaudette. Like, why wouldn't he have spent 2 years with us so we can groom him and get him better? And hopefully, and the goal is to get a more rounded finished product before he's out of his entry-level contract to Vancouver, you know what I mean? As opposed to something that's maybe rushed and it's not as finished of a product. Because we all know in the NHL, even though I still believe development still needs to happen, that it's a results-driven league, and I understand that. So, but, you know, sometimes we have to have a greater look. And I know from being inside those organizations, I was there, like, that – we have to be patient. And that's one of the things that, you know, I see with the new regime coming in, that, you know, it's about doing the right things. Like that's the first time in my 5 years that Pod Colson was sent down, as opposed to, you know, the last time we're in playoffs, Archibald couldn't go on waivers because they were afraid of losing him. So it's a different mindset, that's for sure. And I think that's the right one to have for us moving forward.
Was that the thinking with Jack Rathbone? Just wanting him to get him down there, get him playing games, and not to be like, as soon as the opportunity came to call him up, then you called him up?
Well, I think you got to have to talk to the general manager or the president. I mean, find out their viewpoints. But, I mean, I can only give you mine and my opinion. And I felt for Jack that he needs time. He needed time. Like, and, you know, that's where I think you've heard me say this or someone else, or to someone else, that I've done the study. I did the study on Jack 2 years ago, coming out of where it started in, I think it was prep school, and then, or even, I don't think it was high school, but then to where he went to college and then getting pros. Like, I did a comparable of him and Jet Wu, and the amount of games played from Jet going through major junior to say Jack through to his path to us. Like, he hadn't played hardly any games. And that's what we said. Like, the guy needs to get games. The same thing for any goalie, anybody who there's certain benchmarks where they need to have so many starts or so many games played to see what kind of product you have. Right.
What is the plan going forward with Jet Wu? Cause a lot of people were wondering why he was playing forward.
I'll play. Like, it was out of necessity. We had, as you saw, there was quite a few players from the Abbotsford Canucks playing for the Vancouver Canucks, just like I referred to before. And we were trying to find someone with a little speed, a little bit of a forecheck attack. And that was, Jet was good enough to do it. We talked to him about it. He jumped in and I thought he did a really good job. And I thought it was just more of a hope for the team to try to create some more of a, I mean, we're not a big mean team, so to speak, you know what I mean? I'm not saying you have to be that way, but we needed to try to provide some kind of a forecheck. And then and that was one of those things with the guys that we had injured down there, Bailey at the time, Will Lockwood gets called up, just that necessity of trying to take away time and space. When Jet gets moving, he's a guy who can do that. And he provides some physical play. And so that was the thinking.
With regards to how much a guy should play in the American League, and you know, you alluded to your time with Tampa Bay, and there's a number of great examples of guys who played a lot of games. And I think it's important to know that, and I've talked to Ryan about this as well, just logging a lot of games as a professional is vitally important because you get those reps and you get them in key situations and in playoff situations and stuff like that. You mentioned Gaudette as an example. If you had the ability to do it all over again, if the organization had to do it all over again, would they maybe say, you know, the grand total of 16 games that he played in the American League before going to the NHL just might not have been enough?
Well, if you're, again, asking me my opinion, I would say yeah. Absolutely. Like, you know, how can you replicate what we're talking about with Tampa if you're not doing what they do. You know, I mean, we can't have a guy who only plays 16 games pro and then he's going to play in the NHL and then wonder why, you know, it's not maybe the right product for the group moving forward. You know, this is a kid who's a Hobey Baker winner. Like, you need time to acclimate to the National Hockey League, I think, or to that level, or to pro hockey. And there's some, like, you know, I'm not talking about Pedersen, who's the rookie of the year in the National Hockey League. I mean, you know, there's other players that need to spend some time in the American Hockey League so we can hopefully round out their game. And I think it's also a way of keeping your salary cap in check as well. But again, if you're asking me my opinion on that player, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, why wouldn't we have had him there longer to try to get a better product to the NHL so he's more NHL ready when he arrives there?
Okay, this is really interesting because one of the debates that we keep going back and forth about is that if a younger player thrives in the American League, some people would subscribe to the dangling carrot theory. If you do a really good job at one level, the dangling carrot is you get to go to another. What are the conversations like when a guy is doing really well at the AHL level and he wants to be in the NHL and you have to tell him, we understand that you've ticked all the boxes here so far, but playing here is going to be better for you long term, even if you can't see it right now?
Yeah, I think that's just, you know, having the faith, and that's what we talk about, that there's usually always things to work on. There's always parts of your game that can be better. So, you know, that's the one thing, by being there, we can expose guys to different situations so they're more prepared, as opposed to sometimes in the AHL, you're going to have to be kind of penciled into a certain spot because that's what they need you to do for that moment or that stretch of time for them to win hockey games. So what we can do down here and provide that is to have guys play in all situations and work on those. Like, there's might be a guy who's not very good on the power play, but we're going to work with him to get that better, but is great on the PK or something, or for instance, those different things. So those are the things, the situations that we try to give a guy the more rounded approach to make sure that they're ready for that. And I think that's where, I don't think anybody's busting through the door and saying, like, I'm ready right now, I have to go. You know what I mean? Like, your time will come too, you know, and usually throughout the year you get your chance, and when you do get your chance, you want to make sure that you're fully prepared for it.
We're speaking with Abbotsford Canucks head coach Trent Kull. Trent, what was the difference between playing in Abbotsford and playing in Utica?
Just for me, I think it was really good for our players to be on the West Coast in the sense of getting used to the grind of the NHL, Vancouver Canucks, and what they do for travel. Traveling through time zones, planes, et cetera, days on the road, and, you know, and always trying to get something out of every one of those days. Great part is, just like we're talking about, if someone's hurt or unavailable after morning skate in Vancouver, we need a guy, we get him there, he can be there, he can be a player for that team that evening, and vice versa. There could be guys that are not in the lineup for Vancouver that they can get back, play for Abbotsford while we're at home as well. So, and also kind of referred to this before in an interview last week, I think it's good for our players to be in the media market in Vancouver. I use the term an energetic fan base, which is great. And there's a lot of people, a lot of media around the hockey there. And it's a different environment. It's maybe one where, whether they're right or wrong, people are going to say things because they're trying to prosper their career. And whether that's very, you know, correct or not, and our players have to deal with that. And, you know, the young guys now, they're all social media connected, and it's a bit of a battle for them. And I've had talks with some of the guys too, just about how much they're taking in, because, you know, a guy can do well, or if he has a bad game, and all of a sudden could be the worst player in the world, right? So it's tough on them too. So it's a good learning tool.
There are some real idiots in the media, I'm telling you, Trent. It's like, honestly.
You're talking to two of them.
Yeah, honestly. I've always wanted to talk to, I like talking to young players, and I like talking to coaches and management about social media. Because I just think it must be so tough to be a young person, even if you're a super confident athlete that's done well in life and is popular with teammates and popular with people. If you search your name on Twitter, then it's all of a sudden like this barrage of people ripping you. That's got to be really hard on you. And I think it's John Cooper in Tampa Bay. I think I read this somewhere that he said that, like, he, for the playoffs, he keeps all his players off of social media. I don't know how possible that is. I don't know if you can just lock up everyone's phones or whatever. I don't think it is, but I'm curious if you could expand a bit more on some of the chats you have with the young players about social media, about hearing their names in the media, because Vancouver is a tough hockey market.
You know what, for me, and it was a great learning experience for me as well, because there's so many, I guess you'd say, voices out there, and whether they're concrete or have the right opinion, but it is what I tell our players, that you realize that you're dealing with people that all they want to do, if they write something positive, it's not really worthy. But if they can do something as negative or as, I guess, to the edge as possible, that's what gets attention. And unfortunately, that's just a tough thing for a young guy to see. And I had it with me too. Like I had my kids are texting me going like, "Dad, are you getting fired? Because you guys just ripped off 3 wins this weekend, and Jack Rathbone was star of the week in the American Hockey League, and the guy's telling you, like, saying to everybody that you should get fired." And so, like,
"Dad, why is Jet Wu a forward? Isn't he a defenseman?"
Yeah, exactly. And I think I get those questions from at home too. And you know what? And you've probably never seen that happen before when you guys were out there and we were in Utica. And sometimes it's a all hands on deck. And as opposed to maybe just, I'm going to tear off here on a tangent, but like, I didn't want to sit Jet Wu out either. Like I wanted to play Jet Wu. We had some defensemen that were pretty decent in that, and they're where they were and their track record. Jet had got injured. We're like, we just get him up and running. Just like, that was the focus. You know what I mean? Sometimes that's what happens, and it's okay. Like, you broaden a guy's horizons, and all of a sudden he goes back on the blue line and he'll be fine. You know what I mean? Maybe he's better for it, you know? So anyways, going back to the social media, but yeah, there's a lot for guys to deal with and how to stream through that. And what I say most of the time is you got to be strong, because there's going to be days where you're the superstar of the media, but there's going to be a lot more days where you're not. And that's where I say to them too, that overall, I don't see the need of it, because it just sends you down a rabbit hole that sometimes you don't want to be, and you're not going to like the end result. So stay the course, listen to the people that got you there, listen to the people that are around you. Those are the ones that are trying to help you and do the right by you, not necessarily someone who doesn't watch a game or someone who makes a bad comment and then 1,000 other people jump on it because they just want to jump on it as well.
Trent, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for doing this. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the offseason and some downtime. I'm sure we'll be doing this again soon as we get ramped up for next season.
All right, guys. Thank you, and I appreciate it. Good job today. Thank you.
Yeah, good job to you as well, and thanks for doing this. We appreciate it. That's Trent Call, head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. You look like you want to say something.
No, it was just a good conversation with Trent Call. I thought it was very interesting that he said that the Canucks rushed Adam Gaudette. That's his opinion. Now, he also said that the new regime, in talks with the new regime, it sounds like they're going to do things differently.
He also went on a tangent, and I respect that, because you and I often go on tangents.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And they preface it by saying, "I'm going to go on a tangent."
That reminds me of a story I heard about Leeds United.
Now, here's the thing about gas prices. speaking of jumping off on a tangent, this is coming out of nowhere, but I'm excited to say it, and Jason, you're going to be excited to hear it. Today is McHappy Day.
Oh, yes.
And on McHappy Day, doing good is delicious. What do I mean by that? All day long, buying any food or beverage item will help sick children and their families stay together at Ronald McDonald Houses across Canada. All you have to do today, Jason, is go to McDonald's and buy whatever you love.
Done.
Big Mac, Egg McMuffin, fries. Has anyone put together a Big Mac and an Egg McMuffin yet? A big McMuffin?
Do you know what McDonald's has now?
No.
Waffle fries.
Yeah, I knew that.
What?
Yep.
Get out of here.
How
really?
Are they? Have you tried them?
I haven't tried them yet. I'm
McDonald's
wanting to.
Has waffle fries?
They're new, yeah.
Do they have wedge fries as well? I did not know that they...
Why are you being... waffle fries is enough. Why are you like, do they have wedge fries too?
What about yam fries?
Why stop there? Fries? No, that's a different product altogether. These are all potato variants.
Yam fries are very overrated, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent.
The other day, right before golf, I was very hungry because I didn't have very much to eat for breakfast. So I went to McDonald's because I'm in such good shape.
It wasn't McHappy Day, but he still went.
And I did the Big Mac meal with the large fries. And then I was so hungry that I was like, you know what? Add a cheeseburger on top of that.
Wow.
And guess what? I regretted it.
You don't say.
At about the seventh hole, I was like, didn't need that extra cheeseburger.
No doubt the anecdote McDonald's wanted when they put this read out there. Order McDelivery or visit a McDonald's restaurant today, which again is McHappy Day, not McRegret Day. How does McHappy Day support Ronald McDonald's?
McRegret.
All day.
It's a tough one.
All day. There's too many R's. All day, a portion of the proceeds from every food and beverage item sold will support Ronald McDonald House charities and local children charities across Canada. Go do it today. Be a good person. Get a Big Mac. Lots more to get to. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.